welcome to the Institute for Government. I see some old friends in the audience and also some faces I haven't seen before. A special welcome to those of you who may be coming here for the first time to this launch of System Upgrade. Thanks to you for that. Thanks to the speakers, three out of four of whom are here at the moment. So, we're full of hope that the fourth one will arrive before his slot. More of that in a second or two. And a special thank you to Tata Consultancy Services, who have sponsored and supported this work for us. This is a public event, so we're all being filmed, and there's also going to be up here in a second or two a Twitter live feed, so just so that you know what's going on when that happens. To the substance of the event, I should have said I'm Ian McGee, Senior Fellow at the Institute, and it's my job to chair this session for the next, broadly speaking, hour or so. We'll get you out well before 2 o'clock. In this week, I suppose, of all weeks, when IT news has been dominated by the challenges at NatWest and RBS, we're reminded of just how critical IT is these days to all of us. And I guess it's a bit of a disappointment that there aren't maybe more business leaders in the room, but it's hardly a surprise. One of the consequences when things go wrong is that things do go wrong. I ran something called the Information Technology Services Agency for 5 or 6 years back in the 1990s, which provided IT services for the DSS and some other government departments. And the one thing that I'm absolutely certain would have cost me my job was if the legacy systems, which we were forever upgrading and building on, had failed, and if pensioners hadn't got their benefit, or if other beneficiaries hadn't got what they needed. Ourselves and the suppliers between us knew what high risk that was. So there's a bit of me that feels for the guys who missed the penalties last night, poor them, and also a bit of me that thinks there that for fortune, not that I was ever in a position to take a penalty for England. You couldn't have done much worse, could you? Anyway, government, it's also a salutary reminder, has got objectives that are just as challenging as those of the banks, that are just as dependent even these days on legacy systems. And it's only fair to say that in an era where there is immediately a focus on what's gone wrong these days, it's right that we should perhaps acknowledge that there is plenty of unsung stuff that goes okay and that people are dependent on, that citizens are dependent on. Not at all a reason to keep on doing things the way they've been done before, as no doubt will be brought out in the course of this morning, but just perhaps a useful backdrop for all of us. Another, as it happens, personal frustration is that whilst I well understand why there has to be an emphasis on cost, that ought not to be at the price of innovation and at the price of improving services to the citizen. And that's something that arguably may be lost along the way if you're not careful. A word about why the IFG did this review and why now. Well, first of all, several of you were in the audience at the time. We launched our report, System Error, 15 months ago. The government didn't respond directly to that. They did on the night, but they didn't respond directly to that in terms. However, they did develop the ICT strategy, which is the purpose of this afternoon's gathering, and appeared to us to buy into a number of the recommendations that we had made in System Error. There's also, coming back to the why now, the wider context of civil service reform, and it's interesting to observe in passing that although there is a reference to IT in the civil service reform proposals that were published in the last week or two, it's pretty passing and pretty generic. It's timely and the IFG hopes helpful to government that Andy Nelson had only recently come into post when we started this review, so that was a further reason why we should do it now. On to the order of play, what we're going to do now, and time to introduce our speakers. First of all, Tom Gash, who is the program director for the Institute, is going to put the research content to you and to describe our findings. There'll then be a response from Andy himself, our main speaker. I'm very grateful Tim for having spared the time to come. Lessons from the first year of the strategy from his perspective as the government CIO. And then we have two inputs, one from Jennifer Rigby, whom you'll see there along the platform. Not difficult to identify which one Jennifer is. And Jennifer is the CIO for the Department for Energy and Climate Change. And a fourth from Joss Crees, who is the CIO of Hants County Council and does an awful lot of work, as many of you will know, around local government more generally. There'll be plenty of opportunity for questions, debate, and observations at the end of all of this. We imagine the input will last for, I guess, up to 25 minutes, half an hour. We shall allow plenty of opportunity for you to have your say after that, and I'll come back and chair that session when the time comes. But in the meantime, please welcome Tom, who's going to speak to you about our findings.
Well, thanks very much for coming. And it's great, actually, to see quite a diverse audience. So a mixture of people who are ICT professionals, both inside and outside government. I spot some civil servants of various grades knocking around. And also, obviously, representatives of the provider community and some interested commentators from outside who really see and recognise, like I think most of us do in this room, the value that ICT can bring to government and how ICT might be part of the solution for dealing with expenditure reductions while maintaining reasonable standards of service. Ian mentioned some of the context. I just want to reiterate thanks both to Tata Consultancy Services for supporting the work, but also actually to Andy Nelson and the entire CIO community of government who've given us the support that's necessary to actually complete this work, giving up their time and their expertise to advise and steer and to provide their perspectives on how things are going. Often what we do at the Institute is capture a record of what's going on in government, and we can do that because of our trusted relationship with the civil service. But also, we can only do it when those civil servants are prepared to take the challenge back and to embrace the constructive criticism that we sometimes bring to something, which isn't always easy in the short run. When the Institute looks at ICT in government, the important thing to recognise is that we don't come at this from a technical perspective. In a sense, I think modern IT today is so complex that no one person could understand it anyway. You'd probably need an organisation of thousands, not tens, in order to start to understand some of the technical complexities of how ICT can enable better working in government. But we do here have an expertise in understanding how departments go about changing their working practices and how change happens. And I think most people in the room are pretty bought into the idea that there is no such thing as IT change. There's only change enabled by IT, and it needs to be driven by and led by the businesses Ian was referring to. Some of the things you'll see on some of our work on our website when we're looking at departmental transformation in the broader context is we're interested in a number of key questions that are very important to us. The first is there a compelling vision for change? Whatever you're trying to do, is it very clear what that is, and do people buy into that? Is there a sense of leadership and engagement around that vision? So is there a broad enough community of people who buy into this vision? And do they feel personal responsibility and skin in the game for delivering the improvement that they're trying to achieve? And then, very importantly, even once you've got that leadership coalition and the vision, are you actually taking the steps as a leadership group that enable the people who really want to change the way things work, the people in the civil service and outside who want to make things work better, to actually make those changes? So if you make sure that they've got the right incentives in place to perform that, are people giving the right skills and support they need to drive that effectively? Of course, we do look for tangible changes in the technology front as well, and changes in the way that people are doing things. It's too early after a year of an ICT strategy to come up with a definitive verdict, and that was always going to be the case when we went into this. What we wanted to do was to identify some opportunities to course correct, perhaps, a little bit early on. And what we'd do is reflect on some of the findings from the government's own one-year-on update report on the progress that's been reported. We look at government ICT and the ICT strategy as trying to achieve broadly two things. Other people will have different characterisations. There are sort of 19 different strands of work within the ICT strategy, which I'll come on to later as perhaps part of one of the difficulties. But there are two really strong common underpinning themes, and both of those we actually alluded to in our 2010-2011 research. The first is the creation of a common platform, as we call it, so a shared government-wide approach to driving down costs, reducing duplication, and particularly increasing interoperability between different government systems. It seems that a month does not go by without an example of the difficulties of communicating between different agencies in government. Last week, I think it was the case of children in care, the fact that police had different numbers on missing children from the Department for Education. There was actually no information for the police often on where vulnerable people were located. So some of these challenges of interoperability, we think the strategy is actually trying to address, and we very much commend that thrust and the focus on efficiency and a common way of doing things. The second, which was a major focus of our work, and was focusing on driving a new way of running major projects. We did some work with Metropolitan Police, the Home Office, and Indigo Blue, trying to try out a different way of working that was very challenging to those people involved, but it's broadly what the IT community call an agile approach. That's a brand name sort of attached to specific techniques. We're more interested in the general principles. Those general principles are a much more iterative way of doing things. Fail fast, fail early, and involve your users at all stages of the process, be that users within government or citizens using services at the end. And again, this approach is there, right, bang, heart and front and centre of the ICT strategy, and a very, very valuable and commendable ambition it is as well. And in the implementation plan that was published in 2013, there's actually a commitment to have 50% of government IT projects using agile principles by April 2013. That's not far away now. So government reported on its progress. It reports £160 million of savings on the cost reduction, shared infrastructure, reuse side of things, and then progress in developing some common infrastructure, progress in public service network, which many of you will know about, cloud store, which is a way of sourcing and procuring new services. And Andy's obviously been at the forefront of that, leading that program as in his role as CIO at the Ministry of Justice. And there's also been other sort of less tangible signs, less sort of concrete signs of progress. Welcome, Joss. I think when we spoke to people, we had some broad endorsement for some of these claims in the government's one-year on update. So people did point to savings in specific parts of the procurement process, and partly this came about from the spending review process. So the spending controls process that's been implemented at the centre. So for the first time, we see real challenge to departments about how they're doing things at the centre. Now, people wanted to see that evolve, become less focused on vetoing things and stopping things from being done, and more on identifying new ways of doing things differently. But there was a real sense that this is actually an opportunity to influence and make across government people recognise that there are ways of doing things differently, or in many places using common solutions that have been developed elsewhere in the system, so highlighting where someone else has done something before, identifying that good practice and adopting it. We heard, however, there was also a bit of sort of scepticism about what the 50% of 50% of departments using an agile project, which has been claimed in the IT strategy, actually meant. So I think some people were concerned, really, that Agile was still happening more at the fringes among a few enthusiasts in the IT profession than it was actually changing the ways of working across the department. For agile approaches to really work, you need changes in the way that you manage your procurement process, different skills, different ways of doing policy making, much more open, as we've reported elsewhere in the Institute of Work. And we didn't necessarily see the degree of change that you might expect as you want to move towards that 50% of agile projects. However, we focus in the report much more not on what's been achieved so far, because it's so early, but on whether we think that the conditions have been laid for future success. And in these respects, I think some things are really, really positive. And I think the first thing is to say that, broadly speaking, most people buy into the fact that the strategy is focusing on the right things, these are the right ways of making change. They told us that this strategy felt a lot more real, and that's their words, not mine. So it was actually influencing behaviour in certain ways. And I think that's partly to do with the spending control process there, again, having a grip and an impact. Also, 80% or more felt that the strategy would lead to improvements across government, so a fairly high degree of confidence among those leading the changes. And I think that some of the things underpinning all those signs of progress were a very interesting model for driving change across different departments. Most people who watch Whitehall well know that driving cross-departmental change is not something we've got an amazingly strong track record of in government. But what's been done, I think, by Andy and his colleagues is to build a small group called the Delivery Board, which is the CIOs of the six biggest departments and leaders from the procurement profession, government digital service, and get a cohesive group of people who feel collective ownership, and there's a real sense of collective ownership of driving this strategy. And those people have also got individual responsibilities, and are collectively they hold each other to account for whether they're making progress on those tasks. So it's a collective model of responsibility rather than one where there is a very strong mandated line from a central CIO, which is what we preferred more in our initial work. But actually it's working well in many ways, and I think works with the grain of the culture of the civil service. The other thing that's obviously had a real impact is the spending controls process. Again, people want that to be more constructive rather than simply a veto point. But the ministerial commitment is the other factor that's been decisive here, actually, in terms of driving some progress. So the sense that there is a minister driving this, supporting it, people will point to several examples of where there's been sort of personal interventions made and a sense of signalling that this is actually something the government takes seriously. Does it go wider than that minister, that particular minister, Francis Maud? That's another question, and I think people are trying to understand how ministers should get engaged in and involved in and think about IT within their departments. Obviously, as you'll see in the report, there are areas where we think some action's more urgently needed now, actually. We had a lot of questions repeated across the senior ranks of the IT profession, also outside the IT profession. One was, how does it all hang together? There are 19 different strands, and they may all seem sensible. What do I actually prioritise when I'm going about delivering my work? How do I sequence all these different things? So we've got 19 different strands progressing at their own paces, and I think everyone in the CIO Delivery Board and elsewhere is aware that some of these things need to come before others, but they're not always sure that those sequences as they currently stand quite work out. So I want to do remote working in time for the Olympics, but you know, have we got our security requirements clear? Do we know exactly what sort of clearances are needed? And so there's sorts of questions about the sequencing. And this is all difficult stuff, but one thing that people wanted us to work on. Another thing was people were really asking whether they felt they were going to get rewarded for their contributions to this new approach, this new way of doing things. Were they going to get rewarded for adopting this approach, or were they going to operate within the existing incentives they had? And I think it's very telling that most people said they did not feel they would be rewarded appropriately. In fact, no one said they would felt in the CIO leadership group that they would be rewarded appropriately for their efforts to support the ICT strategy. Now, this is either then, if this is going to succeed, it's either going to need people who are really pushing the boundaries of what they're doing for the greater good, or it's going to need something that signals very clearly that they will be rewarded for some of this contribution that they're making, all these extra this extra time and effort that they're spending delivering on something that's going to be good for government as a whole. The other question that we really got asked a lot was, do we actually have the skills and resources to deliver all this stuff? Because again, it's quite telling that only a third of people thought that their departments did have the skills necessary to deliver the ICT strategy. So that's a third, and that suggests that's a sort of priority area for focus. So we want to see, in terms of the strategy, people pushing ahead on building the capability, but within considerable constraints, this has to be recognised. Declining headcounts, restrictions on pay, and restrictions on contracting spend. Real challenges there. But what we really think, where we think the focus should be, and this is more our reflections rather than what people told us, is a much clearer narrative for how all these different strands of work hang together, and one that speaks to the various groups involved in actually delivering this. So people say, what does this mean for me? They get an answer to that question. And this is actually something that I think Andy will talk about, and it's something that he's planning to deal with over the coming months. Another area that we think is incredibly important within that is to define what success looks like. And the second area that we really think needs to be focused on urgently is having much better management information on how government ICT is working, how effective it is. It's very noticeable. I know we've got some commentators and journalists here. If you try and work out the question of is government ICT good or bad, it's just very hard work. And this is because, and you know, we know that ICT doesn't always work in the private sector. We heard the RBS example here. Is ICT better or worse than the public sector? Well, actually, lots of the evidence from the individual benchmarks that people develop in their own departments suggests that government isn't doing too badly, actually. Lots of these things are quite difficult, and you can do better. But how can government currently source and learn from the successes there are in government? So how can they tell which department's doing really well on servicing its policymakers and making sure they're all happy? How can it currently spot these things across the board? There's some information being developed, but we think that there needs to be a lot more work done. And it needs to focus not just on the new stuff, so not just on the new projects, the new ways of doing things, and not just on isolated things. It needs to be quite holistic, looking at overall performance and looking at the cost effectiveness of the spend in ICT in terms of making it easier for people to do their jobs in the public sector and citizens finding their transactions with government much easier. That's a real area of focus for us. I know that people have tried on this agenda for a long time and it hasn't really come to fruition. But I think now, with a delivery board that's fundamentally committed to achieving a new way of doing things across the whole of government, they can demonstrate the commitment for doing things differently by agreeing collectively what they think those measures should be, what can be compared across different departments, what can't, and how are we going to assess performance. The final area where we think there is a real need for focus, and it's something that I think people in the ICT profession are well aware of and actually grapple with on a daily basis, it's how do you get the wider civil service leadership engaged in and supportive of some of these changes that are laid out in the ICT strategy. So how do you get a much more productive relationship between the ICT profession and the leaders of civil service departments and agencies? One thing that we noticed, and one of the reasons we think there might have been less progress on Agile than some of the other elements, is because Agile requires a different way of working across the department. And we weren't sure from the conversations that we were having about how confident all the CIOs felt in challenging departmental leaders to do things differently, how much power and support and backing they felt they would have if they were challenging their departments to do things differently. And similarly, we didn't feel also in our other conversations and other research, and I think Ian would be good to talk to you about this from some of his conversations, we didn't always feel actually that the top of the shop in the civil service is always confident about challenging its ICT profession to do better, because this is a complex technical area. They don't have much management information on how things are going in their department, and therefore aren't always comfortable and confident on this territory despite its importance for public services. So we think those three areas of focus now, and really attending to them, would be incredibly valuable for the ICT strategy. Focus on much clearer vision and what it means for specific groups. How do I need to change my behaviour? What do I need to do differently in my department? Much better management information, benchmarking across the board, and a real effort on that now. It's been some time, it's been promised for a long time, it's always been in progress. It just needs to accelerate much, much more rapidly. And then the third area would be finding ways, and perhaps using the Civil Service Reform Plan as an opportunity to do this, of making ICT change and changes in the way that ICT are used something that's central to change, driving change across the civil service generally. This is something that's not just for the ICT professionals who are working hard to deliver stuff. They need support from the business leadership, and the business leaders need to be much more supportive of the supportive and challenging of the ICT community. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Lots of questions that I know are reflected in the Twitter feeds and that you will have as well. Now, I'm going to introduce Andy to give the CIO's response from government.
I'm getting more used to this Twitter feed, because if you do presentations in the past, you go out and ask your team later on the basis of all the feedback forms. I got used to leaving my last speech last week and being told that I'd announced something, which I didn't think I had, about some new hosting framework. But there you go. So introduce myself a bit more. So Andy Nelson, the government CIO and the MOJ CIO. My background is primarily a private sector background until September 2009. I came as MOJ CIO. I took over as government CIO and do both roles from the 1st of April. From a private sector perspective, a mixture of consulting, corporate roles, working for myself, so a variety of things kind of bring to this. In terms of the report, just the headline for me would be, I think it's a very fair and very balanced report. It raises a number of challenges, which I'll respond to. And I'd also like to thank Tom as well, that I think the way the process has gone has been engaging with the CIO community and certainly with me in bringing me through the process. We might not always agree on the things, but it's been a good engagement process. My view of where we've got to, and it's one number of the CIOs in the room I see here have heard me express for a number of months now, kind of goes like this, which is that I think we have made some really good tangible progress in the first year of the strategy. Be it actually publishing a strategy, might be a good start, isn't it? That beyond that, actually saying, well, in later in the year publishing an implementation plan and publicly committing to some targets and milestones, so something that hasn't happened before. And against those milestones, we'd have had just under 30 specific targets to hit in the first year. We've hit 24 of them. And within that, you see things around PSN as a good example. The program's been running for the best part of 5 years. We now actually have frameworks out there against which government can buy, and they're cross-government frameworks. The Cloud Store, which is now in its second iteration. We had, frankly, is one of the responsibilities I have within the strategy, which I've kept hold of. So I've kept hold of Cloud Store and data centers and capability. In Cloud Store, we got bigger interest than we expected. Getting 250 suppliers up there, we weren't sure what would happen. We're now in round two, and we're looking at expressions of interest for round two. Within 10 days, the score was just under 300. And I had somebody, a senior person from Amazon yesterday from the States, saying, actually, I think you're ahead of some other governments. I don't know whether we are or not, but his personal view was in terms of what we're doing in that space. In the procurement space, but some of the deals done with Oracle being announced today from, so the press session that Josh has come from, I think, was on Microsoft and sort of SAP, in the procurement timelines and driving that forward. GDS and .gov.uk. So a number of very tangible things have happened in that first year. But I think there is a real but, and the real but is about implementation and some pieces that go around that. And so the CIO community have heard me say is it's great to have a cloud store or some PSM frameworks or a reference architecture or some standards, but if we're not actually using it and implementing those things right across government, then in danger becomes we've got some nice procurement frameworks and some pretty strategy documents. So implementation is a key challenge. And the things that go with that are certainly something I sign up to in terms of the vision and integration. So integration across those 19 strands. It's been great to get real progress in individual things, but how do they really hang together? How do they not only hang together, but align with the digital strategy, with transparency, with the recently published civil service reform? How do those things come together? In terms of how we looked at that at the CIO Delivery Board, we've just started a piece of work to try and bring that alive. And we've talked about putting together a series of what we've called user views is the phrase I coined, or user stories. So if you're a citizen or an employee in government or a CIO, a procurement professional, a number of different roles you would play in government, let's roll the clock forward a number of years. What does the world feel like? So if I use a procurement example, the typical complaint for the last year or two wouldn't be is it's I don't know which framework to use, let alone whether there are any, and it takes 200 days and it's just a hugely tortuous process. Could I be in a world in the future where I say, you know what, there's a handful of frameworks and there's something called maybe GovStore rather than CloudStore, and that's all I use. And on GovStore, and it's true today, I don't run an OGU process, I can just buy stuff. So try writing that, if you imagine writing stories like that and trying to write those down for the user within government, be I a mobile worker, an office worker, different types of user, what does my world feel like? So it's great for a mobile device, but can I access cloud service and do a bunch of things on it that I like to do? So we're trying to put some of those stories together. We'll do that over the coming months, to build a picture which you hope will not only paint a bit more of a vision, but convey it in a fashion that for the different audiences, be it citizens, users in government, different roles in IT, somebody look at that and go, yep, that makes sense. And then not only use it as something that paints a vision, but then revisit our plans and say, so how do you deliver that vision? You know, where have we got to so far? What else do we need to do to bring that alive? Implementation and by department, we have to take all that vision and actually say, so how are we going to do that by department? So another thing we've just started to do using PSN as the example is to say, if we thought about trying to make PSN a reality across all the central government departments, what would that plan look like? What are some of the specific challenges? The PSN team have already done some work on this and doing some more on it. In terms of resources, would be a third thing I talk about and that the report alludes to as well. The NEO report, 6 months on, would have talked about a concern over shortage of resource. Still have that challenge here today. We have, though, made progress in terms of agreeing central government and cabinet office, creating a central pool of people, potentially up to 100 people, to actually drive the program and put some funding behind it. And the fourth thing I'd have said to the CIO community is about wider engagement. So one of the strengths of the first year has been the CIO Delivery Board. I think in that collective ownership, as Tom alluded to, you might say, I would say that because I sit around that board, but I think it has made a real difference. People who are around it or not around it would say it has made a difference, as the report points out. But for the broader CIO community, again, some people in the audience, kind of what does that mean to us? Is this strategy just for the big boys over there? What about the rest of us? Does it work for us? So engaging with the CIO Council as one community, engaging with local government, such as Joss there and others, and engaging with industry. So I'd have been speaking in front of the industry body the other week and challenging industry and what their engagement should be with us. What do we need to do in government and what do we expect of them to respond to that? So this would be generally, you know, where I would see it. If I actually look at the report itself and look at some of the comments made, let me just briefly respond to some of the things it specifically says. So the compelling vision for change. So I was pleased to see that through the survey, people saying this feels more real. There's a tangible program and stuff's happening. Pleased to see that people thought the strategy was sensible. I mean, at the levels of why wouldn't you have a single network and rationalised data centre and these sorts of things? Yes, it is a sensible set of things to do. But the coherent narrative, I absolutely agree with. Clarity in what success looks like, I agree with that too. Hence trying to put something together, a CIO delivery board, and then through CIO council trying to paint more of a story of what this should feel like when it's done and how it should feel in an integrated fashion. So I would absolutely share those views that those are things that need to happen. In terms of leadership engagement, delivery board working well. Indeed, Tom actually came and joined one of our most recent meetings and sat there. I think we genuinely forgot he was in the room and had a good healthy debate around actually it wasn't a strategy and vision integration, how we put these stories together, which was the first time we'd done that. And he joined the meeting and then quietly left. So I don't know what he actually thought, but it sounds like he thought we were working well together. But moving to that delivery phase, that point of planning by department, actually saying an individual department number in this room, so it's great to have somebody for a PSN at me and these other aspects. What actually does it mean in my world? If I align that with the agenda of my department, how do we actually bring these things together? It needs some real thinking through about how we do that. And there'll be a balance, and there'll be some tension in that. So there'll be a push from the centre to drive these things through and a push back to the departments about when things will be aligned. We need to work through the plans on doing that. So some challenges there in engagement, you know, I would also share here. If we then talk about enabling rapid progress in terms of actually pieces working here, then I think resourcing I've already touched on, so started to do something about that. I don't pretend we've sorted that issue, but some concerns on resourcing. I think the incentivisation, the cross-departmental piece, you know, Tom, your rewards point, I'm being flippant for a moment. I think many CIOs would go kind of rewards period rather than whether it's just for the central strategy might be a response you would get in a world of no bonuses and no pay rise and that sort of thing would be one piece. But I think it is a good point of how do we create some hooks around some of that, and you may want a suggestion at the end of the report that I'll respond to shortly that certainly in my private sector background I would recognise. So then at the end of the report you sort of raised some challenges to us in terms of, as you called it, the sort of, you know, the wider issues. And I think in terms of those sort of specific points you raised there in terms of how can you strengthen collective responsibility and accountability. So ensuring I kind of look at all CIO appraisals, and I wrote, yeah, possible, in my spare time, but I think a more serious point in there is, you know, I would agree with you around having greater clarity on how well IT is doing. Interestingly, you'll find in many departments we'll all have probably scorecards and various things we're actually using. And we've talked about as a group, can we bring some of that together? So use an MOJ as an example. So I don't have the grandest visionary statement. It says deliver better for less. It's expressed in business context. And if I try to use a measure of that in my 2.5 years there with the team I've recruited and the capability we've built, do I think I can tell that story of better for less? I really think I can in terms of if you have measurement of service or measurement of project delivery, the classic, you know, budget to time scale and so on, versus we've achieved both those measures, we've driven down costs and we've driven down headcount. And if you took, say, the project measure of success delivery, industry standards I can get hold of from Gartner and others talk about 2/3 of projects, we'd have taken it from 60% to 85%, and I'm not the only department that's done that. So I think there are some success stories in there. We need to try and pull that information out, and it complements the metrics and the strategy. I think some things we can do that sort of share that better for less story. And so I think there's something we should do there, and again, something else that links to the strategy. So if it's a cost per transaction, the digital world, that's a phrase people have heard, you know, how does IT kind of align up, you know, behind that? In terms of being involved in appointments, so just speaking personally, have I been in my first 3 months? Yes, absolutely. So it's been inconsistent, I know, if government CIO to be involved in that, but certainly something I'm very much part of in terms of people being appointed. And then I think your last one is probably the most challenging one, which is with the business of taking, you know, civil service leadership more broadly, you know, with us on this journey. I think that's probably varying, frankly, across government. Again, look at CIO's room, how we feel about that and from day to day, how well we feel we've got our business support. It's fair to say, using MOJ again as an example, what would be the first thing business leaders certainly engage me with on it would be for service issues, there can be no doubt. So I'll get plenty of engagement to that point. And that's fair enough, actually. You know, the job number one is to deliver first-class service. Number two, deliver projects well. So some of the fundamentals. But we'd like to move the agenda on to really that business focus and that citizen focus. I think we're having varying success in that today and been able to shift that agenda on. But certainly something we need to do. So if that's helpful, everybody, just some of my sort of initial thoughts on response to the report. But as you can hear, and genuinely, in terms of my own summary, it would share some of the things the report has said. And as I say, CIOs in the room would recognise that, having heard me say that for the last sort of 3 or 4 months about where we've got to.
Tom, thank you. Now, and thank you, Andy. Now, for some very brief inputs, one from a smaller department, Jennifer Rigby, and Department of Energy and Climate Change, and also from Josh Crees, as to how local authorities can benefit from this and where the connections lie, where perhaps I haven't read their scripts, I don't know what they're going to say. More needs to be done. Jennifer, over to you first.
We're all right to do that from here?
Yes, you're
mic'd up.
Yep.
Everything all right? Yep. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. So, as you heard, I'm Jennifer Rigby. I'm from the Department of Energy and Climate Change. And just to give you a very brief bit of context so you can understand where I'm coming from in terms of our IT. We are a small department, so we're about 1,500 people. We're a small IT team, so we're about 8 people in the IT team. We're very much about shared services. We're very much about reuse. We're not about doing things ourselves where we can get away with it. We think we're pretty aligned with the IT strategy anyway, in that we do utilise a shared service from another department for our basic IT. We get our line of business applications mainly from an open source platform, which we have SMEs develop on, and we do that in an agile way. So I'm hitting all the buzzwords here. But certainly there's a lot more to be done, and there's a lot more to bring us into line with the overall strategy. We're also quite hot on our green IT. I have to give that one a bit of PR, because we're doing quite a lot on that front. We've already done quite a bit, and we've seen some great results, both from the point of view of saving carbon and from the point of view of saving money. I think on the overall report and looking at where we're at with the ICT strategy, I do see it as a good news story, because I'm inside and I get to see a lot of the work that's going on and a lot of the progress that's going on. I think having the CIO delivery board has been a real positive. So great for me in a smaller department, have the big departments doing lots of the work here, have them delivering things that we can reuse. That works really well. And there's been quite a lot of progress on that front. And I think the overall gist of the strategy in terms of modernising our IT, getting to a place where we've got better services, both for civil servants and for the public, is where we all want to get to, and making those services more cost efficient as well. And I think I challenge the rewards piece, because I think that is part of our job, to use public money to the best in terms of value for money, and also to make sure that we're improving services both for our own clients in terms of civil servants and for citizens. So I think that has some reward in and of itself, and it's part of our job to do that. For us, where I see IT in a smaller department working best is where I think it's at its most flexible. So by that I mean the kind of hardware side. So for us, supporting flexible working and being able to let people work in different places is a core component of our strategy, and that supports what the civil servants in DEC need to do. And in terms of the platforms that we've got, the ones that are more agile, the open source platforms, the ones that are less commodity that we can work on more quickly, I think in those areas we get much better user satisfaction, and we get a quicker, more rapid ability to make changes and make those services support the business. And I think there is a challenge there, because in the more commodity-based services, you can't necessarily change those as quickly. And so there's a trade-off there between what is a cost-effective value-for-money system. And we have saved quite a lot of money by transferring our services either to shared services or onto frameworks, as opposed to something that's maybe more agile, more bespoke, that you can work with yourself. So the challenges that I see, and they do line up quite well, you'll be pleased to hear, Tom, with the report, is definitely around reporting. For us, IT team of 8 people, the amount of reporting that goes into producing some of the metrics that you see, and also some of the things that we internally use to measure our progress against the strategy, that's quite an overhead, and I'm not convinced we've got the balance right about what's useful in that information. And we need to be a bit more Rapier-like about really pushing through and saying these are the metrics that matter, these are the things that indicate whether we're actually improving things. So the metrics piece, definitely. I think there's a piece around integration and complexity. So for me, if I'm looking now to get more flexible services, I want services where I have more choice and I can drive out cost and also move to better platforms as a result, and that's things like the cloud store really help me with that. But what that gives me is an integration headache, and one that I don't necessarily have with some of the shared service setups that I have now. So I think that's an area of complexity that we need to look at, and I think one of the other areas that we could look at is better coordination between the smaller and more medium-sized departments. So one of those things, as an example, putting in place some kind of integration service, it's not just going to be my challenge, that's going to be a challenge for other departments as well that are moving to more flexible models and more tower-based models. So DEX leading one of the areas of work for the Cabinet Office, looking at, well, what is that kind of integration layer for smaller departments? So that's something we can do collaboratively, and I think there's more work to be done. We can self-organise on that. We don't need the Cabinet Office to tell us to work together. We can do that, and we can learn a lot from local government in terms of how to do that. So I think that's already happening, and that's a real positive. So my priorities, just to finish off now, really are this implementation business that Andy talked about. I think we're a bit schizophrenic as CIOs at the moment, because we're implementing the ICT strategy with Cabinet Office together, collaboratively, which is a good thing, and that's about working on the work streams and getting those products out. But we also need to implement within our own departments and pull all of this together and turn that into something that works for us as a business. So that's the priority now. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of desire to get on with that and get it done, and get it done quickly, because one of my personal views is that CIOs in government at the moment are a bit too inwardly focused. They're not working with the business enough because they're pushing to move on to new frameworks, sorting out procurement, looking at how their IT aligns with the ICT strategy, and actually we want to get up and out with the business and looking at how we help use IT to modernise the process of government, whether that's for civil servants or for citizens. And then the other thing I just wanted to give another plug for as being a priority, because Tom mentioned it, is security. So that's another area where I think that's a dependency on the whole implementation piece that we need to do. And it's good to see some work going on around that. But again, it's about bringing all these strands together, making this coherent picture, managing those dependencies, and then getting on and implementing in the departments.
Jennifer, thank you. We have had a different perspective there. Another different one again from the local authority perspective. Over to you, Joss.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My apologies for being slightly late. It was an example of collaborative working between central and local government in practice, because I was over the road with the launch of the new arrangements with Microsoft and SAP, which is a pan-government arrangement from which both central and local government can benefit, and it will certainly further some key aspects of the strategy. Sadly, the beach volleyball got in the way of me being here, and it took me half an hour to cross the road, so I think that's an argument for decentralisation, if only of the beach volleyball. The IT strategy for government is arguably one of the most important government strategies, but it often does not get the profile. It underpins everything that we do across government. It underpins modernisation, new ways of working, transparency, open government, efficient delivery, streamlined and often shared back office functions, redesign of services around the needs of the public, meeting greater demands from the public. The list goes on, and in particular breaking down some of the silos that exist or have existed in the past between central and local, and indeed within local public services. And I represent a group of public service organisations through the local CIO Council that was set up to both support but also challenge the development of IT strategy and policy through the national CIO Council. And there are a number of, I think, quite effective collaborative programmes that would never have perhaps occurred in the past. The PSN programme is one of those, in many ways actually being led by local government, I would argue. But if there's going to be a success of the strategy, it has to be embedded in everything that government does, and it has to be seen as a change program, not as a technology plan. For example, it does need to be driving new and more standard ways of working. It does, as you heard earlier on, require a level of IT competency of leadership in government, staff employees, as well as a very strong IT professional group. And in this, there is no real difference between local and national delivery of services. And it is, as you heard earlier on, the outcomes that will be the measure of the success of this strategy. More efficient and flexible working. Breaking down some of those silos so that services can actually be joined up in ways which are more meaningful to the public. Improving engagement with the public being in more control of their interactions with us in the public sector, and in so doing, not only improving services, but potentially rejuvenating democracy as well. And in particular, delivering better outcomes in specific areas, so using technology to drive better integration of health and social care, which makes budgets stretch further and allows the public to get a better service than perhaps would have been the case without the technology. That's the primary ambition, in my view, and I think a pan-government approach, which I know Andy is very keen on developing within the strategy, which tackles that opportunity of using technology to improve services at a local level as well as a national level, is where the longer-term benefits are going to lie.
Josh, thank you very much. Now, it's time to go over to you, and because we're running short of time, I'm not at all going to abuse the position of the chair and ask a first or second question. What I would like to do, please, is to take questions perhaps in groups of three so that we can deal with them together, and be full of hope that that means that we'll get through as much as we possibly can. If you could just introduce yourself as you ask a question, I'd be very grateful. Yes.
Stuart Loughlin, publictechnology.net. I wanted to pick up on a comment that was made in the original report and in this one, which is not going to be an unfamiliar question to Andy, because I know you've been asked it so many times before. It's the day job versus the cabinet office job question. We do have yourself doing a split role. We have Denise McDonough doing a split role. This report seems to suggest we would be better off with a single person focused as government CIO. I'd be interested in your response to that.
Thank you. Damien?
So a question probably primarily for Andy. Damien Venkatesamy, Tata Consultancy Services. One of the issues that the report highlights is that of departments prioritising their own needs over pan-government initiatives, and that could quite significantly hinder the success of implementing this strategy. So I'm just wondering, beyond the CIO delivery board, have you given any thought to what specific mechanisms could be used so that departments start prioritising these pan-government initiatives over their own initiatives and start to see ICT as being maybe something that can enable some of the change that's required?
Thank you. And just one more in this group from the front here. Thanks, Karen.
Hi. The general tone of both documents, sorry, Fintan Galvin, I'm CEO of Open Source Consultancy Ireland. The general tone of both documents seem to lack one critical thing for me, which is how are you going to develop the people? There's a general sense of, oh, we're going to buy in all these people. Well, first off, you've got bloody good people who know the systems in-house already. How are you going to develop them? And how are you going to, I mean, even with the apprenticeship scheme and things like that, start to build up that internal resource so that you're not back in this situation when they leave because someone paid them more?
Okay, well, I think that's quite a meaty three to begin with, and I'll ask Andy to begin the response. Essentially, summing up, should there be a pan-government CIO devoted full-time to the role, specific mechanisms to prioritise pan-government effort as opposed to effort within a department, and just observe in passing, that's at least arguably much more of a challenge for government itself than it is just for the IT community, because I don't think, except in some well-defined areas, it's one that people have necessarily got right at all. And third, that critical question about developing the people. But Andy, perhaps I could ask you to give me your views on any of those, really, but particularly the first two.
I'll go for all three, actually, Ian, because I kind of own the people piece as well. So day job versus cabinet office job. Yeah, lots of people ask me that, anything from my family to other people. It's about how you do the job, I think, genuinely. So one of the pluses, I think, absolutely has been the CIO delivery board. So that collective ownership has been good. I think it does undoubtedly help if, pardon the phrase, you've got to eat some of your own dog food in terms of actually doing the strategies. I think that helps around that community. So I think that's a real plus about it. So you kind of accept that's a real plus and there's good evidence the delivery board has worked well, then it's about where you focus your time. So if I compare myself more to John Suffolk doing it previously, what would you see me doing less of? It'd probably be less direct industry engagement. It would be less playing in the space of one of the roles of the CIO is to almost represent UK government internationally, and things like that. So some things that, John would have spent quite a bit of time on. So my focus is absolutely on the strategy and its implementation. It is secondly on refreshing it. We talked about earlier about pulling it together as a vision. Thirdly, on the whole capability piece, which I'd like to address the people question. And then fourthly, some engagement, but very targeted. So with the industry, deal personally only with the biggest three suppliers, talk through intellect, and so on. So it's trying to make it focus and really focus on the key things. And then Liam Maxwell, as my deputy, has a crucial role to play in how he complements that and probably does a broader engagement agenda than I do. But it's fair to say I'll genuinely personally reflect on it. I think come September time and just stand back and go, how's the first few months feel? And is that kind of the theory working and how do I spend my time? I checked back at MOJ the other day, my immediate boss, in terms of, is this working from your perspective? The answer was yes. So the department wasn't kind of going, this is not working for them. Damien, in terms of the sort of pan-government piece and departments versus pan-government initiatives, I think two answers. One is the controls mechanism. For all the good, whether people like it, and I'd have been a victim of it as well as kind of a semi-owner of it as well now, then that's actually fundamentally one way to drive that, and that's quite a hard thing to do. It's the stick rather than the carrot. I think, as I said earlier, we've got some real work to do to look at plans. So we are using PSN and John Taylor's leadership as a first go at. So John, tell me, if you went to every department, all the central departments, lay down a PSN plan, how does that look? And you could get to this conflict of somebody says, I'm not ready to do it for 4 years, and we go, no, that's not good enough, need them too. We need to work through why that's happening. I'm interested to see, as John does at the PSN, what are the issues that come out and trying to align those things? And PSN is kind of something that people wouldn't argue with intellectually, but will be a timing question about when it happens. So I guess those are two things for me, I think, do that. And the people piece here wouldn't be mentioned today, but again, one of my team, Paul Waller's in the room, in terms of he took the capability strategy in government, we published last October. Again, I could spend quite a bit of time here talking you through the different, I'm not saying we conquered it all, and it's a concern of mine, but we've done a number of things around graduates, apprentices, schemes in terms of working with industry, a variety of things to try and build that capability, but it's not something you do overnight. It is not something you do overnight. So there is a whole focus on the strategy, and that's driven by an IT profession board that's a super group of people, anything from the CIO of the Scottish Government, local government, BCS, Socotim, Intellect, Scottish Government departments, a group of people working on that agenda, but it's something that'll take a lot of time to really bring to fruition.
Is there any different perspective that other members of the panel might have on this group of questions at all?
I just think reflecting on I suppose what we're talking about with both the question of full-time and part-time and the cross-government incentives is what's the leadership model for activities that benefit the whole of government, perhaps more than they benefit the individual departments. And I think it was very interesting doing this piece of research because the first project that we did on government ICT found a lot of the same issues. And we recommended an independent, dedicated CIO who had very strong powers of mandate. And I think one thing that doing this check-in again has made us realise is not that that's necessarily the wrong model. We still think that's quite an attractive model, but it can't operate by itself. Because there's no way that the government CIO, as currently constructed, I think, can easily go to a departmental permanent secretary and say, you have to do this, you have to change the way you're working around this, you have to start using agile projects. It's not within the culture of the civil service and the way it works doesn't necessarily work. So what's needed really is a look at the fundamental leadership model of the civil service and the role of the new civil service leadership, Sir Bob and Sir Jeremy, and thinking about how a collective can increasingly grow, I think, of leaders of the professions, of the leaders of the civil service, that can start to think collectively about how they reward not just ICT professionals in departments who are contributing to whole government outcomes, but policymakers, operational delivery people, finance professionals, HR. And so you can actually start to get the benefits from the fact that you are one government, effectively, trying to achieve outcomes for citizens.
Thank you. Next group of questions. One in the middle there and one just behind. Just behind you.
Chris Francis, IBM. I mean, my question is getting back to, I think, the inward focus. The context of public sector IT can be radically different from other contexts. Decisions that have significant ICT implications could be taken in European co-decision processes. They could be in the Chancellor's speech under budget secrecy rules. They could be in a committee, bill committee amendment hearing. They can cover privacy, security, access to data, freedom of information. The range of areas where something with some really quite fundamental IT implications can be made happens way outside your office, if I may. Mm-hmm. How does the system, any system, cope with that kind of context?
Okay, thank you.
Philip Blon, Res Publica. A question about procurement and wider strategy. One of the interesting things that perhaps hasn't been mentioned is the growth strategy and the fact that so much of productivity and even GDP gain comes from ICT. And one of the things I'm interested in asking is how this drive for standardization, interoperability, to what extent does that become a barrier to new market entry? To what extent does that favor incumbency and incumbent providers? And so what I'm asking is, what are your, I'd just like to hear some more about your strategies for new market entrants, smaller British firms, getting a position in terms of government procurement. Because Chris White's bill on public services social value has now become law. And what that means is for every item of public expenditure, there has to be a local economic audit. Now, that could just be a tick box thing that people ignore. But on the other hand, it will be challenged in the courts and it could become quite radical. Because from BIS to other departments, there's a huge emphasis now on plurality of providers, new market entry, and breaking open Schumpeterian innovation type approach. So what I'd be really interested to is to what extent this completely cogent and right attempt actually has hidden dangers, and to what extent you recognise that and create an open space for new market entrants.
Okay. Yes, I'll just take this one as well.
Thank you. Mark Anthelogoff, I work on digital transformation and assurance. Coming back to the people thing again, the original report asked the question about culture and the difficulty of culture change. And this has been alluded to in well, by several of you, really. Jennifer, with inward looking. Andy, you mentioned the challenges engagement with the wider business. Tom, you've mentioned this. And also, when you started, you were talking about the danger of processes. Effectively, we need agility rather than agile processes specifically. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on how we deal with this, because this seems to be the fundamental issue of how we get people to think differently, work differently. And if I remember correctly, in Francis Maud's letter outlining the civil service reform, he refers in one line to changing from process orientation to outcome orientation, which is something I've been speaking about for some time as well. So I'd appreciate some thoughts around this core issue, please.
Right. So three quite deep issues there. Again, Andy, I think it's possible for you to respond first. First of all, the plethora of requirements, the very different place they can come from, and how do you contain that as you move forward. I don't think a challenge that necessarily is new to 2012, but there is a challenge all the same. Secondly, interesting point about the extent to which a common approach to, for example, procurement may arguably create a barrier to new company entry or indeed plurality more generally. And thirdly, back to people but from a different angle, how do you instill the culture change in the organisation that might, and this is my input to this, that might allow you to utilise some of the methodologies that we have talked about more generally in our report.
Okay, let me have a go. So the broader context, somebody spent all by the last 2.5 years in the private sector, and it's sitting from IBM, I think it's the biggest difference I would say to people, well, people have lots of things different, it would be the huge stakeholder environment. so I don't have an easy answer to your question. I think if you look to elements of the strategy you're trying to drive, be it, you know, PSA and some of the infrastructural things, those sorts of things, I kind of go, well, those are fundamentals, I think, stand regardless. So I think you shouldn't let those other things kind of distract from those core fundamentals. A lot of what you're looking there, I would say, we should just be doing anyway. Where your point plays, I think, even more as you get to the more business-facing end of that, so trying to do the business delivery versus the core infrastructural delivery. And it shouldn't be an excuse, I think, not to get stuff done. Which kind of plays, I'm going to jump to the culture thing for a moment. So again, using my sort of private sector background, one of the things I would notice in government, and Ian will recognise some of the things you've done across on the criminal justice sector, Ian, isn't it, is that you talk about 80-20 rule, the classic phrase used, and I think that's one of a huge challenge in government as a real culture, and the outcome versus process. So coming from a private sector world, people care, focus on the outcome first and the process less. Again, comparing, when I've worked in both environments, I think one of the challenges in public sector is you're required to justify more what you've done. Yeah, you know, so somebody says in the PSC inquiry or their freedom of information request, you know, how do you get to that decision? Private sector view of the world, typically, I don't really care till it goes badly wrong, of course, and they'll sack the CEO or whatever, and that's the answer. But there is a real difference there. And the 80-20 for me is crucial, personal perspective. So again, use criminal justice as an example. 80 may not be the right answer, but how many simple cases are that could flow easily through the system? The natural culture is to say, let's try and automate everything. Let's look at all the different types of cases and automate those. And when I talked to the Universal Credit team encouragingly a couple of weeks ago, I've done a tour around the big departments. I was pleased to hear them saying, we are not going to try and automate every exception. You can't. It would just be too hard. So I think that is really challenging. I think an outcome, the encouraging bit out of the strategy, is having a strategic implementation plan. So just selfishly in the strategy itself, there are some dates there, some financial measures, some metrics and so on. So at least there's a more outcome style in that, even bit in those pieces. And then the sort of, you know, broader open piece, I think cloud still, I'm not just saying because it kind of my bailiwick within the strategy, is a real breakthrough. So I think it's 75% of all suppliers and their SMEs. Yeah. And it's an environment in which you find the service you want. It's an online catalogue, so let's not pretend it's fancier than that. You find the service you want that meets your need, you can go buy it. Now, we're struggling to track all the purchases today because the problem with the catalogue is you find the phone number and talk to somebody and buy something, how do I track all that? But it's in tens. It's across many departments now. Some of it's quite modest and so far. So I don't think standardisation should necessarily inhibit that. And in the networks, you look at the PSN recently, typically in government, there would have been the top three comms providers with the people who won the business. We're going to look at who's been awarded the business, and it's a mixture of some of the usual people, if you like, and a bunch of others. But where standardisation really helps in those infrastructure layers is that interoperability. You know, it's in that infrastructure. If you can really work in the desire to join up government, these infrastructural pieces we're doing, it really does need to be standardised, interoperable. That does not close out SMEs, and I'm encouraged by what we've achieved in CloudStore, but there's a long way to go. When I speak to SMEs, I'm going to host a group of them a couple of weeks' time. Intellect have now put SMEs around their public sector council. Quarter representation, first time it's happened, and I'm going to have dinner with them, actually, just after them, say, you tell me. So it's one of our challenges for government is to engage with that huge breadth of SMEs. How do we do that? You can help us think about how we make that happen. So I'm trying to engage in that personally around this. Talk about it, but I really think we've made some progress. Early days, but I think that's a real breakthrough CloudStore.
And the culture change issue?
Well, I got to say, I think I linked into the first one, I think, there, Ian, in terms of, yeah, I think the 80-20, the process versus outcome. I think 80-20 is my favourite phrase. Can I work with my business colleagues on, actually, I can get you a faster solution for 80% of the need if you just let me do that and don't clutter it with the other 20. And that's, I don't pretend I've got an easy answer to that, because that's a real shift in a world that genuinely and rightly worries about all citizen needs. How do you persuade people to get the right balance?
Just one observation from me, and indeed my own experience here, on Chris's point from IBM about the different places that these requirements can come to. I mean, sometimes it does require quite a lot of guts, and indeed you'll have had to have built up the level of trust with your minister or whomsoever first in order to do this. My experience of IT people, private and public sector, is that A, of course, they're analytical, and B, they tend to be can-do, so if they can do it, they will. But understanding the constraints if something new comes along is a conversation that needs to be had for me. It's not something that you just graft on and take the cost down the line regardless. There may be a temptation to do that, perhaps particularly from the policy end, because candidly, they may know that the minister will have moved on, they'll have moved on by the time this comes to fruition. That ain't good enough, in my view. There'll be a cost, or there'll be a time delay, or there'll be
some other consequence, something else will have to be left out if we do things differently. And you wouldn't want to be challenging every minute of your life, because you wouldn't last very long in certainly the civil service environment or any other environment, I suspect, there. But that sort of challenge, the spelling out of the reality, seems to me to be an important element of this. Now, Josh, you had an observation on one of that last group of questions.
Yeah, just a couple, really, particularly on the issue around standards and standardisation being a barrier. I think there are times where we suggest that diversity increases choice and that must be a good thing, but actually we know in IT terms across government that actually that sort of diversity is often an excuse for doing it a different way that results in us not able to secure best possible value out of the investments that we've made in contracts and software in particular. I think in the past we've probably been able to afford to have tailored suits, and now we need to have off the peg, but that doesn't mean that the suit doesn't have to fit. It can be made to fit, and it does still offer some choice. I think in that as well, there is a fallacy in assuming that that diversity squeezes out, that diversity favours the small and squeezes out the big. I don't believe that's the case. I think greater standardisation and greater standards through particular things like the App Store will actually encourage and enable some of the smaller organisations to do business with the public sector, where many will say at the moment that we are too difficult, expensive, or risky indeed to operate with.
Thank you. We have time just for one last group of questions here. Two in the front. Gary.
Thanks. James Geddes from Department of Energy and Climate Change. So I think it's fair to say, it's been government, that we've been here before. I mean, I think complaining about IT and government is a decade, I mean, it's 4 years old as IT. Do we understand why we keep getting here again, and what's different this time?
Okay. Yourself.
Hi there, Sinead Hunt, also from IO1. I was just wondering if anybody has a figure or a percentage available for the ICT. What percentage of the budget has been spent on agile work to date, if that's available?
Okay. Right. Let's take those two as our final inputs from the panel. Why do we keep going back to the same place, Andy? It's possibly unfair to lumber you with that question.
I'm here for the first time. I'm not sure. All I can say, I guess, and I'm probably not the right person to answer, I should maybe Jocelyn, but maybe I have a better perspective on this, because it feels different. What I'm being told, it's different. So, you know, if I think about some people in the room, Robin here at the Home Office, who are talking about, you know, been for many years, this does feel different in the progress we've made. So I'm not sure I've got an answer to that, frankly. It does feel really different. Percentage agile, no, I don't have a figure. We have some figures we published about a number of projects. I don't have a percentage budget figure, I'm afraid, but you'd have a range from anything like universal credit, probably the single biggest IT program we're doing that is adopting agile approaches, down to some much smaller things. So I don't have a figure, but there are some key things being done, including major projects, not just things on the margins.
Tom, almost the last word.
I feel like others should speak to the questions earlier about culture and how you drive cultural change in departments. But back to the question about why we keep coming back here. I think the one thing that came out very strongly from the report that you just have to reiterate is that IT can't just be a thing for the IT profession, that people in the rest of any organisation expect the IT professionals to sort out by themselves, because the interdependencies between the way you do an IT project and the way you do other things are just so high. I mean, the amount of interactions with the amount of different players involved is just so high that it can't be a sole function process. It's a collective process of driving change for the business. And then the other thing I think one of the other reasons we get back there, I suspect, is to do with the level of comfort and understanding that people generally in leadership positions in organisations have with dealing with ICT related issues, and that I think would apply to lots of civil service leaders as well. There are some real exceptions, actually. I've got Sir Alex Allen sitting there who's got on the very high end of senior civil servants who actually understands and appreciates the value of technology. But it's so much the exception rather than the norm within government, and there probably is stuff that we can do around the training and development and the selection of senior civil servants to make sure that people understand what ICT can bring and how they can get more out of it for the public and for the people who are working in their departments.
Which would just about have been my last word, so I'm not going to add anything to that. just remains to thank you all very much for your time and for your interest. Thank you.